So welcome everyone to our Rogue Yogi Real Talk, formerly known as Science Yoga Sundays. And thank you to everyone that's watching this replay later on. If you have any questions, if you'd like to say hi, you can share your name, where you're from. And we will be sure to address your questions throughout the conversation or towards the end of the chat. So we have a blend of teachers, students, and everyone in between that's curious about yoga. Maybe it's the first time you've been practicing yoga, or you've been practicing for quite a long time and you have your own questions about how to approach the practice moving forward. This conversation is designed to share freely. You know, we're having a heart-to-heart talk, and this is a type of dialogue that you won't really get in a studio setting. I'm Julie Tran, and I'm from Los Angeles in San Francisco, but I am currently in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to be here with Trina Altman from Los Angeles, California. So say hi, Trina.
Everyone is here live.
Awesome. So you guys are in the right place, whether you're a teacher, your student, or both, and regardless of how long you've been practicing, you'll get to learn a different perspective on yoga itself. And what I'd love for you to do is be able to start asking yourself really inquisitive questions about how you regard your body, how you take care of it, and how you practice on and off the mat. So these conversations they're intended to be real, they're intended to be candid and touch upon ideas that it might contradict what your favorite teacher is saying, but there's no right or wrong answer here. It's just to inspire you to investigate your body and your mind a little further. So in the end, you become your best teacher. We'll give you a little background on ourselves just so you can get an understanding of where we come from. I'll share mine first and I'll pass it over to Trina. So I've been a yoga teacher for over 5 years, and I started off just being a student. I was really clumsy, and all I wanted to do was to learn where my right foot should go, where my left hand should go, where my head should be turned, and I wanted to be less clumsy. So I took a teacher training just so I could figure out the correct way to do things on the mat. And I ended up falling in love with the spiritual aspect and just the whole mindfulness aspect, and got into being a teacher. And throughout the past couple of years, some questions started to formulate in my mind. I started to feel like some of these postures I was guiding my students through, I didn't quite understand their bodies, and I was worried about them getting injured. And I also ran into a lot of students where I would try to adjust them, and they would tell me right on the spot that they're dealing with an injury. So, you know, I started to take a step back, started to think about how my own personal practice was going. And lo and behold, there's an opportunity for my husband and I to travel the world. So I stopped being a teacher, went into full student mode, and we've been traveling from country to country where I get to learn about how yoga is taught in these various areas. At the same time, I still wanted to learn from amazing teachers in the US. So this is how this Rogue Yogi Real Talk came about. I get to sit down, have an amazing conversation with these advanced teachers and pick their brains about the journey that they've gone through as well. So I'm really excited because today, sitting with Trina Altman, I have been seeing her videos, I've been seeing her shares in Diane Bruni's Yoga and Movement Community group on Facebook. And I just thought, wow, her personality is so vibrant. She's very passionate. She's also been sharing so much detail and insight on just how we've been going about yoga a certain way. And it's helped me open my mind about how to even approach the practice. And I've actually practiced some of the exercises she shared in the video. So I'll pass it over to Trina so she can give you a background on herself and her yoga and Pilates. So take it away, Trina.
Okay. Let's see. I took my 200-hour training in 2007, and then I did my 300-hour, actually started those modules while I was finishing up my 200-hour I did my trainings in Connecticut with a wonderful teacher. Her name was Kim Valeri, and it's called Yoga Spirit Studios. And the 200 hour was wonderful because it was 1 week in a month for 13 months. So we had 3 weeks in between to do all of our homework and our practice teaching and all the readings. And we formed a wonderful bond. I think there were about 23 of us or so. And just became so close and did things outside of, training. So it was a wonderful experience. And I started the 300 hour modules with Kim, the same Yoga Spirit Studios, because I knew we were moving and I wanted to do as many as I could before we moved, so I wouldn't have to fly back for a lot of those modules. I never know what to talk about because I'm old. I'm 45, so I'm like, the first time I took a yoga class was in college, so I don't want to take you through, like age 19 to 45, but 2007 was sort of the beginning of my yoga teacher journey. I had a lot of different careers before this career. And then after my 300 hour training, I did a Pilates comprehensive teacher training, and that just happened by chance. I'd been wanting to do Pilates for a long, long time, and I took my first mat class. I went with my mom. She was taking some classes in Oklahoma, which is where I grew up. And it didn't resonate with me at all, the mat class. I'm hypermobile, and it just, I was so floppy then that it's like, it didn't make sense to me. But I was sort of, and so I always wanted to learn on the apparatus. I just didn't have, financially wasn't, a possibility. And when we moved to Iowa, I taught at a yoga studio that also was a Pilates studio and started taking reformer classes. And that made a lot of sense in my body because there's all these closed kinetic chains, which is just a fancy term for you're getting feedback. And then there was also resistance from the springs. And the woman who owned the studio was pregnant, and she said, there's a training that's starting next month. And if you do the training and pass the test, would you cover for me out when I'm on maternity leave? And I was like, sure, I like this. And so, yeah, why not? So that began the Pilates journey, and I was seeing how much it was helping me to stabilize my joints. So after I finished the Pilates training, it's about, I think it's 450 hours, the comprehensive. I learned a lot of anatomy and just like the basic principles of the training that I took, things like scapular stabilization and lumbopelvic hip stabilization. And once I learned these concepts, not just in my brain, but also in my body, we moved again. We moved quite a number of times. My husband is, he was in med school and then residency and internship and fellowship and all that. So we moved to Los Angeles 7 years ago in 2010. And I was starting from scratch, and I kind of knew I started subbing a little bit, flow classes here and there. But I had learned enough in the Pilates training. I was watching what was happening in the room, going, okay, there's not a lot of scapular stabilization going on here. There's not a lot of, sort of basic exercise science, biomechanics principles being implemented because there couldn't be, there's 45 people in the room and the music's going and everybody already knows the movements pretty much. They're just flowing through. It's not really a teaching environment. It was more like a guided dance class. There was the choreography and everyone knew pretty much the choreography, and the teacher would walk around and say, the choreography. And so I was like, I don't think I'm going to teach yoga. I'll just teach Pilates. And then I took the yoga tune-up level one training, and it opened my eyes to a way of teaching yoga that was in line with what I had learned about the body and anatomy and kinesiology in my Pilates training. And it had a different name. So I could walk into the classroom and say, "Hi, my name is Trina. This class is called Yoga Tune-Up. It's not a flow class. That's the class before this class and the class after this class. What we're going to do in my class is," and then I'd say what we were going to do. And so I didn't have to start from I was starting from scratch so I could teach exactly how I wanted to teach. But it meant I would drive, like an hour and a half each way. And I didn't ever teach in any yoga studios. I taught at a Muay Thai boxing gym and a country club and a place that had Pilates and physical therapy. So I always taught at places that were a little more open. I've taught at Equinox, which is a gym where the people were open to learning new things and were oftentimes injured and definitely open to learning because maybe they had been injured in a regular yoga class. So yeah, that's kind of where it started for me, teaching in this way. And
It's such a unique type of scenario where you intentionally said, "Hey, I'm not gonna teach in a yoga studio." You decided that you're gonna teach in other locations,
well, I didn't have
and
a choice. I knew they didn't want yoga tune-up classes. They wanted the kind of yoga. Yeah. So, yeah, no, it wasn't an option.
So it's kind of a blessing in disguise then, because with what you were learning and discovering for yourself, you wouldn't there would be such a discord with the studio owners because, I mean, speaking from my experience, there was, even the topic of adjustment. When I auditioned for a yoga studio in San Francisco, this owner wanted me to just demo like do adjustments right in the demo, and I just thought that doesn't make sense because I don't know the person's practice. So, you kind of dodged a bullet there where you said, "Oh, okay, well, they're not going to take you, but you get to be able to teach really the way you want to."
Yeah, no, it's funny now that you say that. I did have one audition I remember at a yoga studio that was very far away, but I thought it was my only chance to, I didn't know anyone really. And I gave her, she wanted, I think, like a 40-minute class. And yeah, definitely the feedback I got was no, you're not. She came from an Ashtanga lineage, and I was not teaching Ashtanga style. I mean, she had other classes at the studio, but yeah, so I think part of it was just also age too. So 7 years ago, I would have been 37. So I'd already gone through the stage of my life where, I'm trying to fit into somebody else's box. And I was at a stage in my life where, like, okay, been there, done that. Like, now I actually know what I want. I trust what I want, and I'm gonna make it happen. Even, if it's hard, because the other just didn't feel right.
The whole thing about feeling like you might be the only one thinking this way, that is a pretty challenging road to take because the whole yoga industry, at least in the Western world, it's driven by the fitness centric, the physique centric, the external. We're doing these yoga classes so that we can shred up and get some abs out the deal, right? How was that like for you? How long did it take before you discovered there are other teachers that are vibing with what you're standing for?
Well, I think, yeah, it was truly a blessing that I ended up teaching at Equinox. I've been teaching there for 7 years, and I can say to them, what you're getting from me is what you need to do after you've already gone and done your weightlifting or your cardiovascular exercise or your HIIT class or your Zumba class. I mean, I do all of that stuff. I love all of that. My class is not, it's not cardio and weightlifting. It's it's down regulation and challenging your brain and improving your proprioception, your interoception, finding some of the places in your body that might not be doing enough and getting them to do a little bit more, finding the places that are doing too much and getting them to calm down. And so, yes, I could always be very clear that yoga isn't cardiovascular exercise. Like, I mean, unless you're going to do, 50 jump backs and get your heart rate up, it's just not. I mean, just go take the HIIT class and do some burpees and also like lift some weights and do some lunges. So yeah, I can see how, from the other thing was teaching at a gym was really nice because if they you pay one flat rate for everything, for all the classes, for all the equipment. And so I was always fine with people coming in late or leaving early, if they needed to because it was a lunch hour class, or I was fine. I would say, if this isn't your cup of tea, try it out the first 15 minutes. And if not, just you can leave and like go do your own stretching in the foam roller area, So it was a very different experience that was really good, has been really good for me. I wasn't having to say, you need to come take a yoga class every day for 30 days because that's how you're going to, become enlightened or lose weight or whatever the promise is. I didn't have to say that. I could say, this is what this will do for you. And then all the stuff down the hall and downstairs and upstairs will do the other things for you.
I love the fact that what we're saying here is it's not just yoga. It's not that hashtag yoga every damn day. It's hey, do yoga with the weight training, with the HIIT HIIT training, with hiking, with everything. And I think that was something that took a long time to accept, and it took trying to hike up a mountain for me to realize that, doing twisted chair pose, and trying to work on, where my right toe is pressing and my left toe, that didn't do anything for my hiking. I was so out of breath. It's like I need to go do a spin class or something.
And I mean, we're speaking about yoga right now purely in terms of asana. So yeah, you only need to cross train your asana. You don't have to. I mean, I guess you could cross train your pranayama and your meditation because yes, you don't want to do too much of that either, or you'll end up in very downregulated or maybe disassociated state. Balance with all things is really important. But yeah, a lot of us have to learn the hard way. I know I did.
What does yoga mean to you personally?
We learn go, 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 push, 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 work harder, work faster. And so I would say yoga helps me to pay attention. Yoga helps me to notice what's going on in my mind if it starts spinning, which all of our minds spin. But also, I think yoga is always, it's always been different in different parts of the world. It's always been different to different people. I think it can be anything you want it to be, in a sense, because it's such a broad art and science, which is why we all love it so much.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's a blend of the art and the science. And I was just in India the other month learning about yoga philosophy and just thinking about how it came to be is that there were a group of people who decided that they were better just stepping away from the system. The matrix or whatever you call it is the majority of how the world's operating. And these guys decided to step away and look inward and meditate. And they meditated for a really long time. And I saw this photography exhibit where there was like really old architectural pieces and artwork, but all I saw was a triangle pose, Trikonasana, and lotus pose, Padmasana. And I believe it was doing a headstand hanging from a tree. But all of these poses that we see right now, that whole sequence that you see in the Ashtanga series and all the other flow series, there wasn't any of that. So, for people to get that perspective of yoga is what you make it to be, that's how it came to be what it is right now. So it's the sense of freedom for you and I and the viewers to see that, hey, it can continue to evolve and really become what you need it to be for your mind and your body.
Definitely. I my previous career, I worked as fashion designer and jewelry designer, textile designer, and there were always the trends, the ebbs and flows. Every year, the trend forecasters would give us, these are what the colors are going to be this season. These are what the styles are going to be. So design things that are appropriate for our trend forecast. And as far as trends go, usually what's popular has to be something that hasn't been popular for at least 20 years. And the reason I'm bringing all of this up is because if we're talking about sort of the fitness part of yoga, so the asana part, the modern postural yoga, I keep saying I'm going to write a blog about this, but fish, I always say fitness is just like fashion. It's interesting that everybody, a lot of people became interested in yoga in the 60s, and their only way to learn it was either from a few teachers here and there or from a book, like Richard Hillman's book. And then it sort of blossomed. People stopped moving their bodies because of technology and lifestyle changes, and so we had to create ways to move our bodies, exercise and going to the gym and all of that. And so I remember in the 80s, I would go with my mom to aerobics class, and Jane Fonda was the rage, and we would jump up and down. It's called high up and back aerobics with our Reebok high tops, on the hardwood floor. And it was so much fun. And the music was blasting, and you wear the cute leotard and all that. And then everyone started getting injured, right? Because you can only jump up and down on a hardwood floor over and over again for so long. So then low impact aerobics became popular. But people got bored with that. So then Reebok step aerobics became popular. And that was where you had a little step and you would do a dance and put down on the step. The latest trend I would say with yoga is extreme flexibility and a lot of stretching, creating more acrobatic type of shapes. And so then the kickback, right, is that people got injured, and so now ooh, there goes the water. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. This
I know, as
is.
long as it doesn't spill on the computer. All right. It's great because it's not great that people are injured, but it's great that people are doing something about it and seeing, like, oh, yes, you can't just keep jumping on a hardwood floor forever. You can't just keep stretching your limbs into oblivion. You eventually have to bring some strength into your movement, diet or regime. And so it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see, now with all of the strengthening work coming in, who knows? Everyone might go back to stretching in another 10 years. But to sort of, keep it all in this big perspective of how we are as humans and our tendency to kind of go to extremes and then learn things the hard way. So I'm really excited about this shift because, 7 years ago, it wasn't, so much of a thing, and now it's kind of, I think, reaching more of a tipping point. So.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch-22 now that the topic of yoga has made it to the reality show scene, and it's all over TV, it's all over social media. On the flip side, yeah, it's bringing a certain image of yoga, but now it's so recognizable that teachers like you can be able to really okay, here's yoga, but here's how you can do it if you want to practice for a lifetime in a safe way.
Right, and these are the other things you need to do, if your only movement day to day is asana and sitting at a desk. But yeah, I mean, of course, any movement's better than no movement, but it's I always liken it to food, and just like our digestive system needs some variety with how we feed ourselves. Biomechanically, our joints, our tissues need variety with load. So,
So when you say variety with load, just in case we have really new students watching this video, can you give an example of what that means or what kind of exercises or movements that would entail?
yeah, so for example, with yoga, most of what you're doing, or all of what you're doing, is pretty much body weight exercise. So you're never lifting, pushing loads that are, say, less than your body weight, really. I mean, sure, when you shorten levers, like you bend a knee or you bend an elbow or you change your relationship to gravity, that does change the load a little bit. And you're never pushing more load than your body weight. So when you go to the gym or the Pilates studio or the gyrotonic studio, you have options. So instead of, you can pull, that's one thing. So there's no pulling in yoga. You're pushing because everything is really gravity based. And so then that can create an imbalance. Depending on everyone has sort of their individual thresholds of how many years, maybe, or months they can get away with, just doing one thing. Whereas, say, if you have a stretchy band or a spring resistance or a cable machine or a kettlebell or a weight, you can say, today I'm going to do, 2 pounds, and tomorrow I'm going to do 4 pounds, and then the next day I'm going to do 8 pounds, and then I'll work my way up, sequentially, instead of, say, just going from never, lifting anything to lifting something that weighs the weight of your body. So, for example, with crow pose, if the heaviest thing you've ever pushed is the grocery cart at the supermarket, or the trunk of your car, which, I mean, for most of the people that, many, many people, that is the case. Our life doesn't require pushing anything heavy. And then you go and you're pushing your whole body weight in crow pose, or say, more than half your body weight in a plank or a downward dog or a chaturanga. It's not surprising that you might injure yourself, because that's just not how exercise science works and loading works. You have to be gradual with it in order to not overload the tissues.
Okay, thank you. Because even to this day, I am still grasping the concept of, doing a posture like eagle pose, like twisting the arms and pulling, how that is not the pulling that is enough or sufficient to be able to, it's not load, is what I'm trying to say. That
Right.
this kind of pulling is not load. This is pulling, but it's not. That's.
I mean, it's not, there's no external load. So sure, like right now I'm sitting on a chair, so I'm loading my tissues and joints from sitting on the chair, or lying, say, on the floor or whatever you're doing. But yeah, that's different than, say, Paschimottanasana and pulling on your big toes versus going rock climbing and climbing up a rock or doing a pull-up, or even just say going to the gym and there's the bar, the lat pull bar, and you put the little peg in 10 pounds and you pull it, right? Or you could put it in 50 pounds and pull it, or 40 or 80 or 200. So that would be a lot of options for pulling if you weren't strong enough to do a pull-up. You wouldn't just like never pull anything and then go expect to do a pull-up of your whole body weight. But yet that's what we do in yoga with pushing.
Gotcha. So this leads me to my next question, Trina. So if we have viewers who are very passionate and dedicated to the traditional aspect of practicing yoga and practicing the asanas, what would you like to share with them so that they get that, you know, what they learned from their teachers was, how do you say, that the teachers knew the best that they knew and shared what they did at that time, but how do they bridge the gap between that and now with what all the science and discovery is showing?
Right. And I don't think it's really anything new. The science has been around. It's just, if you're in an insular community that doesn't, that keeps themselves insular, then you won't know about other things. So, for example, the Pilates training that I took, it was a woman, her name's Moira Merrithew, and she studied with one of Joseph's primary teachers, Ramana. And, back then, Joseph, he was around the same age as, Krishnamacharya, and or not Krishnamacharya, but BKS Iyengar and Patabi Joyce and Deskachar. And, they didn't know a whole lot then. But once Moira got injured, she decided, I really love this Pilates. I'm going to hire some physical therapists and exercise scientists to change things around a little bit so that other people don't get hurt in the way I got hurt. So that, every time we do external rotation in our Pilates practice on the Cadillac and the Reformer and the Wunda chair and all of that, that we're also doing internal rotation. Just simple things like that that aren't rocket science, but that were geared towards function as opposed to aesthetics. So, capitalism, Joseph had a lot of dancers that he was working with, and they needed to work on their turnout. Yoga, if you think about how many, I think Eagle Pose is one of the few poses I can think of where there's very much internal rotation of the hips. It's a lot of external rotation. And again, that's... it's more aesthetic, right? if you're going to look at something with somebody like with their knees and toes turned in, you need to load your joints in that way and be strong in that way just as much as you need to be strong in this way. but for photographs, for performances, which is a lot of what was happening, with BKS Iyengar and Patabi Joyce and Krishnamacharya, they were traveling around, touring, doing these performances. It needs to be, or Instagram or the cover of Yoga Journal, the shape has to be aesthetically pleasing to the eye in order for people to be interested. But that doesn't mean that, your joints only deserve to be strengthened and moved in aesthetically pleasing ways. You can do it for a while, probably in your teens and your 20s, and get away with it. But after that, you're going to have to balance things out a little bit.
Yeah, when the injuries are, we hope you don't get injuries, but for me, and I know for you, we had some sort of neck injury starting to creep in to our practice. And you start to think about how to shift the approach to the practice moving forward.
Yeah, and I think, there are people who will never, ever be injured by yoga, and there are people who might be injured right away because our bodies are so different. And I think what would be great if it were taught in schools at a young age is just these simple things to know, like, are you hypermobile or are you hypomobile? Or are you somewhere in the middle? And that in and of itself would tell you, well, if you're hypermobile, you really don't need to stretch. But that's not what your body needs. You need to strengthen. Or if you're hypomobile, you can still strength train because you still want to be strong, but you might have to spend a little extra time doing mobility work instead of more of a one-size-fits-all type of recipe.
Gotcha. So this leads me to my next question. This is for you personally. with all of this research and all of these discoveries and what you share with the students and teachers all over the nation, how do you balance sharing the information as a teacher with practicing it as a student?
Yeah, I love learning. I'm a learnaholic. So the reason why this career finally worked for me is because as a teacher and an educator, I get to continuously learn and embody it and then teach. I also learn the best in a one-on-one situation, especially when it comes to movement. So ever since my Pilates training, so about 2009, I've always done a weekly session with somebody, a teacher for Pilates. The woman I've worked with since I've been here is trained Pilates, gyrotonic, and yamana rolling. And then when I got injured, I did a lot of physical therapy and learned a lot there, and I really enjoyed that. Most recently, I've started working out with a trainer, so I'm learning a lot there. But that's how I balance out all the giving and the teaching, is by making sure that I'm also, you know, getting the learning myself. In obviously, like, I take trainings and workshops and online things, but in a one-on-one setting, I find, because I teach so many privates, I think it's important to know what it's like to be, a consumer. Whatever you're offering, as a teacher, as a product or a service, then you should know what it feels like to be somebody who's purchasing that product or service, because it's going to make you a better provider, better teacher.
Yeah, totally. Because I asked that question because as a teacher, I've met several other teachers who were just in that grind, trying so hard to pick up as many teaching gigs as possible, driving over an hour to 2 hours to teach at a studio because of the opportunities available, and having that experience of that impacting the teacher's ability to really practice, not only to know what they're teaching, but to really practice for themselves first and foremost. And it's a very common thing, though I do know some teachers that make it a number one point to practice their own home practice first before setting out to teach other classes. But
right.
Yeah,
I mean, I was fortunate because with Pilates, you're primarily teaching privates on the apparatus. So right when I finished my training, I was teaching, sometimes 6-7 privates a day, 4 to 5 days a week. And, that's more of a sustainable living financially than teaching no classes. I have a lot of teachers who are Pilates teachers who are friends who also took yoga trainings, and I say, oh, why didn't you teach yoga? And they said, are you kidding? How could I support myself? I mean, I like yoga, but that's why I teach Pilates. I mean, they love Pilates, but there is inherent within the Pilates system this idea of the importance of learning one-on-one, that you're not allowed to take group classes until you've taken a certain number of privates and the teacher feels like you're ready to go into the group class. The group classes usually don't have more than 5 people in them because there's only 5 reformers. So it's just a different model. And in my 20s, my parents were like, I don't care what you do, just get a job with health insurance. So that's what I did. It wasn't until I met my husband, who, was my boyfriend then, who was like, maybe you should do something you enjoy instead of just doing something because of health insurance. And I was like, oh, that's a concept. But, he had a different mindset because he went into debt for medical school and all of his, 13 years of learning. And I was taught never go into debt. So there's a happy medium of, how are you going to do something that you love and also pay the bills and have some balance in your life. And I think when you're an independent contractor, which most yoga teachers are, sometimes that means you have to also, maybe you're a massage therapist or you're also a Pilates teacher. You're doing something where you're working one-on-one with somebody in addition to just teaching the group classes, or teaching private yoga sessions, because it's not usually sustainable to make a living just teaching yoga classes. Hard.
Yeah, I'm getting flashbacks of before, well, the months before we started traveling and just waking up at 5 in the morning to teach a 6 a.m. class and nearly every single day and just feeling like, wow, there's got to be a way for yoga teachers to be able to even put food on the table working at this rate.
You have to become an entrepreneur, and there's no, and that's a hard thing to learn how to do as well. I remember thinking, gosh, okay, I need to figure out how to teach workshops, staff, because workshops make a lot more money than classes, and workshops are, say, 2 hours, and my class is 1 hour 15 minutes. How hard can that be? So then that was another way of, getting income that was more than teaching classes. But it involved, the flyer and the, running around town putting the flyers up. So I think it depends a lot on your personality and what you enjoy doing. Don't you enjoy doing all the administrative and the marketing and all that? No, but if I want to teach, I have to do that. And I'd rather do it for me than how I did it for years, which was, working 60, 70-hour week for a corporation, and eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner at my desk, and, not really having a life.
Yeah, now it appears to me that you're definitely living a very fulfilled life and making such an impact on people all over the nation, if not the world. Just being able to share these nuggets of wisdom that I think that the world is yet to learn about. So all that hard work of, the flyering, the marketing, the driving all over the place, it definitely paid off.
I feel really fortunate. I think this is for everybody. Of course, you have to, you want to do what you love and what you're passionate about. But it takes a ton of hard work, and you don't always succeed, and there's failures, and then you start over and you try again. But it's a very different world now than, when I got out of college. It was 1994, and the economy was just shifting. There was this thing called temping, and that was basically like a freelancer, which was a whole new concept. Most people had a regular salary job or an hourly job, and so, when I think back to, I remember I call my mom and dad and I'm like, I'm quitting my job with the investment bank. I don't want to work on Wall Street. I can make more money as a temp, which, hourly I could. And it gave me the freedom to, work at a whole bunch of different places and figure out what I liked and what I didn't like. But now there's this whole online economy, that you don't have to go through a temp agency. You can just post what you need on Upwork or Fiverr, and there's this whole sort of web of interconnectivity for both, business and connecting with people in a personal way that has never existed before. So it's very exciting.
I'm laughing to myself because, back then there wasn't Uber, there wasn't Lyft. I just remember driving for them in between teaching gigs and doing all these focus groups and taste testing food, just all these random side hustles that didn't exist before.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I lived in New York City, I remember I would always find my apartment through the Village Voice, which was like a real newspaper. And then Craigslist came out, and that was like revolutionary. Like, you didn't need, the Village Voice to find an apartment anymore. You would go online. It was, yeah. A lot has changed.
Yeah, totally. Well, for those of you watching the replay, if you have any questions that come up, whether it's about yoga, Pilates, or even just anything we've shared about today, you can always feel free to email me or Trina, and we can respond back to you. But before we wrap up this conversation, I wanted to ask Trina if there's any special message that you'd like to share with our viewers.
I guess just that what keeps us going as teachers, I believe, is never not stopping the learning process. And when you are in a situation where you can continually learn things and then teach and share them, you don't get bored with your job, you're less likely to burn out. But if you are in a situation where you can't incorporate the new things that you're learning and share them with your students, then it might mean, maybe working teaching somewhere else. And if you're teaching at a lot of different places, say you find a new gig at a different place where you have a little more freedom to incorporate the new things you're learning, and then you slowly sort of, drop maybe some of the places that weren't so supportive of you teaching things that you've learned. So I hope that's helpful, because it isn't like it used to be where you're stuck and you have this job and you have your benefits, right? Bad or good, right? You're not losing your benefits, they aren't there. And to make changes, even though they're scary, because you deserve to teach in a supportive environment where people appreciate what you do.
Thank you for that really powerful message, Trina. I think that it can be really challenging as a teacher to trust your inner truth and trust that what you have to offer, even if it looks completely different than what 99% of everyone else and everything else is showing, that it's worth the challenge, it's worth going through to as long as you're committed to what it's about, which is the health and the well-being, and knowing that this is helping people a lot in the long run.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, the laws of supply and demand. So, if everyone's out there doing the same thing, there's plenty of that for those people that want that thing. And if you're the only one offering what you offer, then there's going to be a lot of people who need it and want it and are searching for it because it's harder to find. So it's, yeah, sometimes hard to remember that when you feel alone. But if you that's my business brain kicking in, supply and demand. Sometimes it's good to be the only person offering something different because they have to try you out. So.
Yeah, being ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Trina, this adds to a part B of the question. If we have viewers that are just students with no interest in teaching, do you also have a special message for them?
Well, if in regards to I guess worrying, oh no, will I get injured if I practice yoga? A lot of people will say to me, oh, I live in this city or that city and I want to take a class or a private, who do you recommend? And I'll say, I don't know anyone there, but if you find somebody who's maybe a little older and has had some injuries, then they probably are more likely to know how to either work with folks who have injuries or help, teach in a way that prevents injuries. And so if that's a concern, but Yeah, I think explore as many different things as you can so that you can decide what feels right. I think a lot of times we just don't give ourselves enough options. We don't look at everything that's on the menu and then choose. We just go to the first thing on the menu and stay with it, which if it works, that's great. But if it's not working, yeah, then there's a lot to choose from usually, even if you live in a small town now with online offerings of classes and workshops and Skype privates, all of it. You have a lot more access to people and learning now than there used to be.
Awesome. So, as I'm holding this cup of tea, Thai tea, I totally got so engrossed in the conversation that I forgot I had this cup of hot Thai tea, which is
Oh,
now.
you I spilled mine.
Anything goes during these talks. So what I'm gathering from this conversation with you is that there is this. If you're looking for that permission to discover and to try and to question, go discover, be curious, and there are so many resources available for you, and that this is a time for you to be able to trust yourself and how you feel and what you know, and find what works for you.
And you're the boss of your body. That's like the bottom line. You're the boss of your body and the boss of your yoga. So if you go to a studio where they put their hands on you and adjust you without asking, go to a different studio. If you go to a place where they're having people compete with each other of who can stay in this pose longer or whatever, and that doesn't feel good for you, then you can leave. I think a lot of times when we're younger, we don't want to rock the boat or whatever, but yeah, just no, you are the boss of yourself, not somebody else.
That is a new hashtag that I'm definitely going to use and credit you for it. Hashtag you are the boss of your body.
Body, you are. It's actually on my website. I say, yeah, you're the boss of your body, be a good boss. So, and I credit
Awesome.
my mom for that because she would always say that
Does
to
she
me.
have an Instagram account so we can tag her for the credit? No, it's private.
Haven't got on Instagram, but who knows? Maybe she'll watch this and mom, you can go on Instagram now. That's where everyone is.
All right. Well, on that note, it's time to wrap up our Rogue Yogi Real Talk for today. And I want to thank the viewers for watching live, and for those of you watching later on, we'll send you an email of the replay, and we will also send you a link, a video Trina's made that she would love for you to watch later on.
It's something that, yeah, assists with your yoga practice and is playful and fun. You learned something, but it's also fun. And I just want to thank you, Julie, for doing this because this is how conversations happen off of social media in more than just a comment or a like or a, and it's really important, the work that you're doing. And I really recommend that viewers watch the previous ones because you had Arielle Foster and Garrett Neal and Jason Ray Brown, and I'm sure you're going to have future people on that are just, really inspiring. And at least I felt inspired and learned a lot from watching the previous ones. So thanks for doing what you're doing, and I can't wait to watch the next ones.
Thank you, Trina, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know that you're up to really big things impacting the health of everyone, and it's just a nice honor to have you here across the world. And
Well, I'll come back anytime. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed
awesome. Well, thank you so much, Trina. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.